From the home of the Codebreakers and the birthplace of modern computing, this is the Bletchley Park podcast.
Welcome to the September 2023 episode of the Bletchley Park podcast. Veterans Reunion 2023. It's Mark, the podcast producer here, and I'm welcoming you to a gloriously sunny day here at Bletchley Park. I think the weather has come out to pay tribute to our veterans who are with us today. Now, as anyone who's listened to one of our Veterans Reunion episodes before will know, each year on the closest Sunday to when the staff first started arriving en masse in 1939, we hold a Veterans Reunion for anyone who served at Bletchley Park and the outstations.
Lovely. Right, I think we're ready. Hooray! Right, you got it.
I've got you.
Right, can everyone see me? Yes, they can. Oh, look at those smiles. Hang on, let's have a quick look. Oh, it's rather good. Let's do one more. Lovely. And one more, please. Very nice. And then last one. Actually, that might have been a bit of a lie. I'm just going to do one more. Lovely. And then one more. And then I'm going to do one with the other camera in case this one doesn't work. That's how professional I am. Okay, here we go. This is with the other camera, just for old time's sake. Lovely. One more. Very nice. And last one. And then... Thank you so much. Thank you very much.
As you can imagine, today is a very special day for us here at Bletchley Park. We love the days when we get veterans to come back and see us, and obviously so many here today. Bearing in mind how old they are. So we'd just like to say thank you for your service. Thank you for your time. Thank you for coming back to see us. And if everyone could just give three cheers. Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Hooray!
Hip, hip.
Now this year we've made a slight change to Reunion, and what we wanted to do was give our veterans more time together, out of the public gaze, so to speak. At this very moment, 17 of our veterans are sat together in the ballroom, all being served a very nice afternoon tea. So they're able to catch up with old friends that they maybe haven't seen for a year, and believe it or not, people who've never been to a reunion before, or not for a very long time. So I think without further ado, I should take you into the ballroom and we'll join our veterans.
I was only joking, I was covering up your brooch, as in your name.
It's okay.
Well, I am Carol. Carol Broughton, and I was in the Wrens during the war. I was a coder, and I was sent to Ceylon during the war, replacing the Wrens that were locked. There were 12 Wrens on our draft.
Yeah.
Well, the previous ship had also had a draft of about, a dozen Wrens, and it was torpedoed and sank. And, you know, some of the Wrens were lost. And I didn't know at the time, but I was sent out with another sort of contingent. Mm. And we were replacing the ones that had been lost.
Oh, wow.
So, that was very... Somebody's shining a bright light. Look, they're filming us. Yeah, that's right. Well, that's my son sitting in the middle of the, between the two ladies, as he would be. He chooses his spot. Hello. Oh, hello. Yes.
So, is this your mother?
It is my mother, yes.
And I'll ask you the question I always ask families. How proud are you of her?
Oh, very proud, yeah. The cheer and the clapping outside, I was almost shedding a tear. I mean, that's, yes. It was quite emotional, yeah.
And who are you?
I'm her granddaughter.
And is it pretty cool having a granny who was working at Bletchley Park?
For Bletchley Park, abroad, travelling the world, really intelligent and code-breaking that I don't even understand how to do. She's been around, of course, around the world. It's such a point of pride for me. I love hearing all the stories. It's so beautiful.
And it's so nice to have you all here again today.
Oh, tears to catch up on sort of, you know, people's experiences. You can't get round to everybody, that's the trouble.
But has it been nice this year where you're all just sort of sat together and been able to chat?
Oh, yes. It's been lovely. This is only about my third time that we've all got together. Because when you're bringing up children, you can't always get away.
That's your fault.
No, it's my fault, yeah. I've hampered her.
Held her back all these years.
Oh, he's letting me free now.
Well, can I just say thank you for your service?
Well, that's very kind of you. I appreciate that.
And I hope you have a lovely day.
Thank you. And I hope I make it for the next reunion.
And the one after that, and the one after that.
Yes. Might be up there somewhere.
Just keep going.
Keep going. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, if I can just interrupt your conversations just for a very short period. For those who don't know me, my name is Ian Sandon. I'm the Chief Executive of the Bletchley Park Trust. And it's my great pleasure and delight to welcome you all here for the 2023
Veterans Reunion. We're lucky to have 17 of our wartime veterans here and family and friends accompany them. It's a great pleasure to welcome you to the ballroom. We've gone for a much more intimate setting than in previous years, and I hope you find it more conducive to conversations, particularly amongst our veterans, but also amongst family and friends here today.
Thank you.
This year has been another good year for Bletchley Park. We're continuing to recover from the difficult time aspect of this place, and of course for our veterans who set this place off in the first place, and we now are hanging on to your coattails. So thank you very much for coming. Thank you, families and friends, for bringing the veterans here. Thank you to my team for organising it all, as always. But most importantly, thank you to our veterans for coming here. And also thank you for your wartime service.
Great pleasure.
Ian Standen, the Chief Executive for the Bletchley Park Trust.
I think it's probably a year since we've had you on the podcast, Ian. You've done really well to get away with not being interviewed this year, really. So fill us in on what's happened in this last year, because it's been another ridiculously busy year, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, clearly we're still recovering from the COVID and the economic crisis, so visitor numbers are perhaps not as high as we'd like, but creeping back up from where they were during those COVID years. People are coming back and enjoying themselves. We've not launched any new exhibitions this year, but the intelligence factory we launched last year is going well. And what we have done this year, though, is launch our new learning facility, taking over wartime Block E, converting that into 8 learning spaces and a room for students to have lunch. This is going to allow us to grow our already highly successful award-winning learning program to get even greater numbers. I think last year we were somewhere just shy of 40,000 school visits, and ultimately this facility will allow us to go up to somewhere around 50,000 plus, which is great. And we were so impressed how the learning program has bounced back post-COVID. We were worried that schools may be averse to coming out and about, exactly, but they've come back in huge numbers, which is brilliant. And the facility opened just the right time to allow us to continue to grow the program. And of course, just around the corner, we've got the new auditorium.
I was going to interrupt you and say you've kind of downplayed the education centre a little, because our listeners will have just listened to our episode on the diplomatic service with David Kenyon and David Abrutat of GCHQ. Now, we actually recorded that in the education centre, and it's amazing. It's not just a few classrooms and somewhere for them to eat. I think it's state of the art, isn't it?
Of course it is. Absolutely. It's got all the facilities you expect, some, you know, fantastic technology to enable the learning. And as I was just saying, you know, with the new auditorium opening up in the end of September, it'll allow us to broadcast from the auditorium into the classrooms.
Oh, really?
To include the classrooms as part of the experience. And we've got big events. They can be sort of outstations on the same event. And so, yeah, I mean, it has a multifaceted technological fit-out, which allows us to do so much within that space.
I'm quite jealous of the mixing desk they've got, because it's all state-of-the-art everything, isn't it?
Well, we try to buy the best that the money we have can buy, so that it is future-proofed. And like all these things, one will need to continue to keep it, you know, state-of-the-art. But certainly what we're rolling out now is the best we can get for the money we've got. And I think it's going to be really, really, you know, huge addition to our offer. So I can't wait till the auditorium is going, because then we can, rather than have 60 chairs in the ballroom for a lecture, we can have 250 people in a plush, comfortable chair in an auditorium that's fit for purpose with speakers and all the rest of the jazz, and then broadcasting speakers from outside, etc. So, yeah, this is a game changer to our public engagement, from everything from the learning through the public programme to, you know, stuff for our corporate partners.
Now, you said the best that our money could buy. It's worth reminding our listeners that we are a charity.
Absolutely, we are a charity, and everything we do here requires us to raise money to do it. Of course, our, you know, visitors buying our tickets helps to that, but that's mostly about running the operational costs of this site. When we do these big capital projects, we have to raise money from all sorts of sources, whether that's a visitor dropping a fiver in the donation box, to a veteran's family buying a brick on the co-breaker's wall, to trusts, small trusts and foundations who are donating, you know, small four-figure sums, through our corporate partners, other bigger trusts and foundations, to, you know, and we're very blessed with some very generous high net worth individuals who, you know, are personally engaged with the story. But yeah, all those people, all those organisations contribute to putting together the financial package in these capital projects that we wouldn't otherwise be able to achieve.
Because it's not cheap doing what we do here, because we do it to a world-class standard.
There's two or three things to mention that make it not cheap. One is, you know, the current economic climate, which makes prices go up. Two, you're right, we do things to as high possible standards we can. And three, we're dealing with historic buildings. It's very easy to look at our wartime brick and steel buildings and think, oh, they're just another office block. But they're not. They're historical artefacts in themselves. Every time you bring one of these back to life, you have to meet all the exacting historical conservation standards to make sure they replicate the look and feel of the wartime building as much as possible, but also preserve the fabric of those buildings. So yes, it is an expensive business,
and it's an ongoing task as well, isn't it? I mean, 10 years ago, well, next year will be 10 years since Operation Neptune, our major redevelopment in 2014, where we opened up the visitor centre and huts 3 and 6. But like I say, that's 10 years ago. They need maintenance, don't they?
Correct, absolutely. And one of the challenges of bringing more of these buildings back into use is you create a bigger and bigger maintenance bill. And that's part of the ongoing need for cash to keep those buildings to the standard that we would hope they will be in terms of presentation for our visitors. Yeah, we're currently, as you alluded to, we're looking at huts 3 and 6 at the moment and just doing some titivation. So visitors might find the odd room closed off at the moment while the team, you know, bring them back up to the standard we expect. But we, you know, we're very clear of the need to make sure they are accessible, both in terms of, you know, accessible for visitors in terms of access, but also that they are an engaging story. You know, we have immersive experience. You don't sit behind a wire looking at these things, you actually go in amongst it. So that does mean they get perhaps more use, more wear, yes, wear and tear than you might like. But, you know, that's part of the ongoing work of our collections exhibitions team, is to keep those as pristine as we can.
Yes, pipes often have to be replaced, don't they?
Pipes, pencils, various other bits and pieces that seem to disappear.
Yes,
but that's, yes, you know, that's part and parcel of the offer we have, and the feedback we get from visitors in terms of having that immersive experience. There's nothing more focusing in terms of the conditions that people were working under in this place to either be here in June this year when it was 40 degrees outside and a lot warmer in the hut, or indeed to come in, you know, a dark January day when it's minus something inside those huts. And you have to remember that people were doing the fantastic co-breaking work they were doing in those rudimentary conditions. That really gives you an experience of what it was like.
Yes, I literally was only saying a couple of hours ago to someone, because it's a very, very warm day here. It's a lovely day for our Veterans Day. It's a lovely warm day. But you get sort of two weathers here, don't you? You get boiling hot or freezing cold. There's nothing in between. Now, you've been in the news a bit in the last week. I think you've had to do a near World War II Code-Breaking Secrecy Act. Which can finally be spoken about now.
Indeed. I mean, as you allude to, in November this year, 1st and 2nd of November, the government will be holding a global artificial intelligence safety summit here at Bletchley Park. This will bring world leaders and leaders from the technology business worldwide here to talk about some of the challenges of rolling out AI, and AI playing an ever more increasing part in our daily lives. This is a British government initiative, which brings together partners throughout the world. And they approached us probably some 6 weeks ago and said, we can think of no better place to run something like this than Bletchley Park. And it took a little bit of working out to see whether actually all the partners involved, all the security aspects could be met. But we were hugely pleased when the government announced it was going to be here, and we look forward to hosting it. There's likely to be a little bit of, you know, disruption. We're going to be closed for a week while it all happens, but that's for obvious, you know, security reasons. But the prospect of the Bletchley Park Mansion being on global TV is one that we're prepared to accept. And more fundamental than that, it just continues to place Bletchley Park in the modern day concept. It continues to echo the relevance of this place, what happened here in the Second World War, the legacy from it, and the fact that people today in these worlds still think of this as, you know, ground zero of the modern technological world, or certainly one of the ground zeros of the modern technological world in which we live, and the fact that the people running this thought of this as, you know, their first choice to come and hold it. So we're hugely privileged, hugely proud. It's not going to be without some hard work over the next 10 weeks to get there, but the legacy should be huge, and I said the global interest in the site will be invaluable to us to continue to spread the great word Bletchley Park,
and to keep, as we always do, celebrating our veterans. And that's why we're here today, another lovely veterans reunion.
One of the highlights of the annual highlights of the Bletchley Park calendar. This is the second post-COVID reunion we've had, a small select band this year, as I'm afraid inevitably is the case as time passes on, but 17 veterans here, ranging in ages, I think, from 96 to 103, something like that, which is phenomenal that they've managed to travel here and come and take part. From those I've met and spoken to today, I've been hugely humbled by their engagement with the site, with their excitement and enthusiasm for being here, which is fantastic. And as you look around and see all our visitors who've come, whether with the veterans or just happened to be here today, and I've met a couple of those who just said, wow, it's incredible, we had turned up. You know, does this happen all the time? I said, no, this is once a year. You arrived on the right day to get and see these veterans.
Yeah, we can't always supply one.
No, exactly. So, you know, people have been amazed by it. They've been great and their engagement has been huge. And I hope we've provided them with a nice environment, a nice afternoon tea in the ballroom. And as we look around here, they're all just starting to drift away. It's been a long day for some of them. I was speaking to one, you know, who left Birmingham at 8:30 this morning. So we're sat here, what is it, you know, 3:30. It's been a long day. So they're drifting away. But we were blessed with a flyover by the Lancaster bomber at 3:00, which was fantastic.
The weather did his wings for them, didn't
absolutely they? And the weather's been perfect. So what could be better?
Well, Ian, good luck for the next few weeks.
Thank you very much.
You'll have a lot of interviews to do, I should imagine.
I think we're going to get a lot of press interest. Certainly, we hope we're going to get a lot of press interest. Yes. That's the name of the game. Clearly, the government and all its participants and the various contributors to the summit will be talking about the important challenges they'll be facing, and that will be the front and centre. We hope to be the backdrop story, which picks up, you know, the World War II history and the continuing relevance of Bletchley Park. And you say, I'm sure we'll have lots of press interest around that.
Yes, and the podcast will take our listeners to the event as well.
Good.
Now, just before I pressed record then, Alice said to me she doesn't have a very interesting story. Now, if I was to say to you, Alice, yeah. I have interviewed about 100 veterans over the years.
Okay.
Do you know the thing that they nearly all say? I haven't got a very interesting story, or I didn't do anything interesting. Now, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Alice, formerly Evans, Alice Volinsky now.
Now, what did you do during World War II?
Worked on a bomb operator sent from here to Eastcote and Stanmore.
So you were
1944.
A Wren.
1944. Yes,
so
it
you
was
were
18.
Yes. How old were you?
18.
So did you do your training at Mill Hill?
No.
Oh, where did you do
it? Leeds Training College.
Oh.
Yes.
So tell me a bit more about that then.
Well, it was there for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly scrubbing floors and bathrooms.
Yes, I hear that all the time. All interviewed. Of your basic training had nothing to do with what you'd end up
Not
doing.
Not at all.
It?
No, no. Interviewed after 2 weeks. And told I was going to be, the officer said, I'm sorry, I can't say anything more, except you have the category SDX, which meant Special Duties X.
Yep.
I didn't realise then that X was Bletchley Park.
No.
Nobody knew, had heard of Bletchley Park where I lived. No.
Well, I interviewed a lady a few years ago who had basically spent 75 years after leaving Bletchley Park.
Yes.
Thinking that she'd never done anything important.
Right.
Because when she finished her basic training, she didn't get a job as a driver or a cook or anything else.
No.
She thought she'd failed.
Yes.
Not realising that she was better than all the others, and that's why she went on to become a bomb operator.
Right.
Because that's what you did, wasn't it?
Yes. And I had 5 friends, we're all the same, come down to going south to London. I hadn't been to London before.
Where were you from originally?
Lancashire.
All right.
Yes, yes.
And then you ended up at Eastcote?
Eventually, yes.
Did you do some training elsewhere then?
No, no.
Where did you go before you went to Eastcote?
We came straight to Eastcote.
All right.
And then during training, we came to Bletchley Park.
To do a bit of training on the bombs.
Yes.
And then you went to your station.
Yes.
So you will remember, I guess, the tweezers.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And we had to smell of oil.
Every drum had the alphabet, and behind the alphabet, they all had the corresponding wires to connect each other, you see.
It was like piano wire, wasn't it?
It was, just like piano wire. And if you had a bent wire, the machine would stop. And, of course, that would waste time. It would be a false stop. So we had to treat them so very carefully. Place your drums straight. And then when you had set the machine going, you had a rack behind you with countless drums on. And we had to check those and make sure that all the wires were straight. And in 45, Winston Churchill, of course, declared that we had to pull the whole thing to pieces. Because
it was really hot that summer and you sat out on the grass, didn't you?
Well, we sat at trestle tables and unscrewing these wretched drums, you know, that we looked after so tenderly. It was very tedious. That was a very tedious job.
It was all being broken up for scrap, wasn't it?
I believe so, yes. Yes.
Were you not tempted to keep anything, to keep a piece of wire?
No.
You just wanted to see it.
I'm afraid we couldn't. No. Off the fort, 12 Watt. I used to stand at the door and just breathe the fresh air. It was beautiful.
I bet it was. Because Eastcote was strange, wasn't it? It was split in two halves, wasn't it? There was a parkway down the middle.
It was. It was peculiar. I preferred it. We moved from Eastcote. We could choose.
All right.
We could choose. And after we'd been there, I had 5 friends and good friends, lifelong ones. And we moved to Stanmore because it was warmer. Eastcote was cold. Something had gone wrong, I think, with the boilers. We were quite cold at Eastcote.
Well, Eastcote's all a housing estate now.
I believe so.
And myself and Jonathan, who does the oral history.
Yes.
We went down because the local historical society wanted to make sure what was done there during the war was memorialised.
Right.
So at the edge of the housing estate, there's a memorial to all of you.
Oh, that's good.
And we went down for the opening of it.
We had, with my five friends, we went on a sentimental in the early 50s. And we walked, we got a bit lorry slipped and walked down. And the wall was there, and we stood by the wall. We could hear the generators. We knew things were going on the other side. And they were there until 56. Towards the end of the war, we were asked if we wanted to sign up, you know, as civilians. And I came across only one person who did.
Oh, right.
And I said, well, how was it? She said, you know, it was splendid. We're on day watch, continuously on day watch. We're well fed and well paid.
Did you wish you'd signed up now?
I did have a little regret.
You would have had no idea what you were doing, how important it was, would you?
Well, we did know. Well, we didn't know we were decoding.
Yeah.
And we did know the intercept of the day because it was colour-coded. The crib was colour-coded, sort of Army or Army or Air Force.
Yep.
Occasionally Navy, which
yeah,
was very hard to do.
Yeah.
Very occasionally Navy, yes. But that apart, we didn't realise. No, we didn't, because we didn't know what other people were doing. We didn't know how it was working.
No.
All we knew was when the machine stopped and we read the code or the keys.
Job up.
And then the leading Wren, you know, would say this, job up, and quote the crib to Bletchley Park. When I came on one reunion, she'd been a leading Wren, and she said, I don't believe this. She was told, she said, I used to just ring Bletchley Park. She didn't know to whom or anything. And she was in Hut 11, and she was ringing up Hut 6. And she said, I don't believe Hut 6 was there. I could have gone round and shut it in, you know. Yes.
Yeah, no one knew.
No. It was, the security was incredible.
So, was it in the 1970s that you realised what you'd done?
Yes, because we were called together. Sir Harry Hinsley, who was the Director of Naval Intelligence, he called, and we had a meeting at Milton, isn't it?
Milton Keynes.
Yes, Milton Keynes. And we went to a hall there, and he told us and talked to us.
Oh, and was this in the 70s?
1978.
Ah.
And apart from that, we came by coach. We came and visited Bletchley. And it was a bit of a shambles.
Oh, yes.
I remember seeing on one of the huts, beware of rats.
Oh.
It was quite decrepit. And I mean, really, this place must have cost a fortune to renovate.
It's cost millions and millions.
It has, yes.
But it's here for all time now.
It is.
And it's here to celebrate what you and your colleagues did during the war.
Well, I think it's marvellous of the volunteers they have here who keep it going.
Yes, they do.
Mm.
And it's all to do what I'm just going to do now, which is to say thank you for your service to our country.
Well, thank you.
And have you had a nice day today, Alice?
It's been the best, because I think the way it's been arranged, and of course, sadly, we're depleting in number, but I've been able to talk to people. Ruth Bourne, and I haven't met her since we stayed at the Swan Hotel in Bedford years ago.
Oh, really?
And yes, it was lovely. And also Jean sat next to me, and I met her for the first time last year. On each reunion, it's interesting to meet people and hear their story, just like you're doing with the interviewing.
Yes. Well, thousands and thousands of people around the world love to hear what our veterans get up to and what they got up to during the war. And it's my pleasure to be able to share it with the world. But again, thank you, Alice.
You're very welcome.
I'm Jonathan Byrne. I'm the Oral History Officer here at Bletchley Park.
Well, we're here again. A lovely sunny day for Veterans Reunion. The weather's normally really good for Veterans Reunion, isn't it?
Yep, every year without fail.
I think we had a tiny bit of drizzle one year, I remember. So I remember, I think, some of the veterans asking Will, our photographer, to somewhat hurry himself along, I think. But yeah, no worries with that this year. 17 veterans this year, and a few surprises, and a few nice surprises for you, Jonathan.
Yes, lots of familiar faces, which is great, but also three veterans who are certainly, if they haven't been at all in recent years, one of the things we do at the veterans reunions is whenever that we speak to a veteran who hasn't yet been interviewed for the Oral History Project, hasn't told us their full story about their time working for Bletchley Park, is we always ask them if they'd like to be interviewed. Now, most of the ladies and gentlemen who are here today have been interviewed, but there's three people who we haven't yet interviewed, and they've all, to my great delight, all agreed that they're happy to be interviewed. So we'll be following those up in the next week or so and making arrangements to go and record their stories.
And it never fails to amaze me that you've been doing this. Well, the Roll of Honour is celebrating its 10th anniversary, isn't it?
That's right, yeah.
And the Oral History Project's not far behind that, is it?
The Oral History Project's actually slightly older. It's about 11 years because the current version, the sort of the searchable version, went live 10 years ago, a few days before the 2013 Veterans Reunion.
And we still are getting people that you haven't been able to interview before. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, the three people here today, obviously we knew about them already and we've had contact with them for several years. But even today, we hear of people who were working for Bletchley Park during the Second World War and it's the first time they've made contact with us, either themselves or through their families. And so, you know, we welcome them on board with Freedom of Bletchley Park and hopefully we can go around and interview them, record their story.
Now, 10 years ago, did you think you'd still be doing this?
Probably not. If I had thought ahead, I would have thought, no, I think time alone would suggest that 10 years is a long time to be doing this, you know, given the age of the people involved. But it's great how, and one thing I've noticed today is how lively and sprightly they all are. When you can think, quite a few of them are over 100, and yeah, they're all really, really with it, and you know, happy to talk, and it's great. So I suppose it holds out hope for us, maybe in 30, 40 years' time, maybe we'll be as fit and healthy as they are.
Yeah, I must admit, each year I do have to tell the odd veteran, do you know what, I think you're getting around better than I am now.
That's right.
So, yeah. Thank you, Jonathan, and good luck with these new interviews. I can't wait to hear them.
Thank you, Mark.
The very thought of you, and I forget to do the little ordinary things that everyone ought to do.
I'm going to stand here.
Oh, right.
In front of two ladies that our listeners will have heard countless times before.
No doubt.
So, could you introduce yourself?
Hello, Mark. I am Jean Cheshire, knee,
Budd, B-U-D-D, Budd. And I used to live here during the wartime period.
And that was because?
My father, mother, brother all worked here on the site. And I went to school from here, so I was still a youngster.
And next year we've got...
Ruth Bourne.
Hello again, Ruth.
Hello.
It's lovely to see you again
Thank
this
you.
Year. Now, would you remind our listeners what you did during the war?
I was a touring bomb operator, bomb with an E on the end. And that's what I did in the outstations. But I never knew exactly what it was for. All I knew is it was for decoding German machine. And so that's what I did. It was only approximately 30 years later, when some of the security blankets were lifted, that I found out that this bomb machine was Turing's invention to speed up the decoding process.
Now, since the last time we would have interviewed you, a few years ago, pre-COVID, you've had an addition to add to your jacket there, haven't you?
Yes, we've had the Légion d'honneur from the French government, who thought we all deserved a medal for helping in the process of freeing France.
Well, you did deserve it.
That's what we thought, yes.
It's lovely to see you both here again this year.
Thank you.
What does today mean to you, getting together?
Well, I think it brings back memories, doesn't it, Jean?
Yes, memories and friendships. And yes, we did enjoy our period in this life.
Yes, I think I would second that. It's been... We didn't enjoy it so much during the war, believe it or not, because we didn't realise how important it was or how terribly difficult it was to break this enigma. All we knew is, yeah, we're breaking German codes. I never heard the word enigma. And we just plodded on. It wasn't terribly exciting. No. But after 30 years, when we suddenly found out what we could do, then it was very exciting. I remember saying to my husband, this is what I did during the war. But he just said, oh, that's very interesting, dear. What's for tea?
That's men for you.
That's men for you.
My husband was the same.
Now, I don't know what it is. I don't know if they put something in the tea when you were doing your basic training. But there seem to be more Wrens around than any other service.
Now,
yeah, so what's the secret to your longevity, ladies?
Well, we used to get around a bit, you know, in our tea half hour.
In the nicest sort of way.
In the nicest.
End of interview.
You mustn't tell him the truth.
The mere idea of you, the longing here for you, you'll never know how slow the moments go till I'm near.
It's right near the end of another very successful Veterans Reunion. All our other interviews, everyone has introduced themselves, but I have a lady in front of me now who probably needs no introduction. She has been one of our stalwart interviewees, but I will get her to say her name and maybe her awards after her name.
Hello, I'm Charlotte Elizabeth, known as Betty Wem. What was the other bit you wanted?
And do you have anything after your name?
Oh, well, yes, I do, as it happens. I'm a member of the British Empire, MBE, and also a holder of the French Légion d'honneur.
So when you address letters to Betty, make sure you put all the awards on them. Now, Betty, have you had a lovely day today?
Absolutely marvellous. I mean, quite apart from the lovely weather, there are all my kind friends here, and it's been a really happy, friendly day.
And was it nice with you all being able to sit together this year and just chat?
Yes, it was. It made life very easy because we had obviously a great deal in common, not necessarily the same service, but certainly the same situations with our jobs.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you're a civilian or Wren or an ATS girl or a WAF, you all basically went through the same things.
Absolutely, yes. Subject to the same limitations. In other words, having signed the Official Secret Act, we couldn't talk about anything outside the office in which we were working to anybody until 1975.
No. Now, while we're on the subject of talking about things during the war, your book has been republished this year, hasn't it?
It has, yes.
And with you, we've got...
Kerry Howard.
Now, Kerry, you're a long-time friend of Bletchley Park and a long-time friend of the podcast. You've done interviews for us at previous reunions when we've had, 70, 80 veterans here. So listeners will have heard of you. But also, you're a very close friend of Betty's and you're also a writer, aren't you?
Yes, she is.
What has been the connection this year for you two?
Well, in celebration of Betty's 100th birthday, we were sort of approached by a publisher to redo her book and add some more detail to it about her time at Bletchley. So I supported Betty with some additional bits of research to help with her story. In particular, she was really keen to talk more about her time at Bletchley. And for me, one of the things I really enjoyed was the fact that the veterans are here, they got to know people. They didn't know what they were doing when they're here and didn't know what they did after the war. So it was really exciting to discover what some of the people you met here did whilst they were here and then after the war. That was, quite really interesting. Like, there's one woman, Wynne Angel. Betty sort of travelled down to her on the train, and then we discovered she'd been monitored by MI5 through the war because of her stateless Russian fiancé. And it's all those things, and it's a nice way to give voice to some of the veterans in the book that aren't always kind of, wouldn't necessarily have their stories told.
Was it an enjoyable experience going back to that book and
yes, it
updating
was.
It?
Absolutely, because what we found out about my then friend, Wynne Angel, whom I thought I knew very well, but I hadn't the slightest idea about the background of her husband, who was a white Russian.
But there was lots of... Now, I know me and Kerry have had a conversation about this. There were lots of details, because Kerry's downplaying her role a little here. She's done an awful lot of work for this, hasn't she? She's been brilliant at this book, hasn't she?
Yes, she has.
Now, you told me a story about a train journey. Do you want to tell our listeners about how blown away you were by Betty's memory?
Betty remembered coming down to London, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes.
And she said yes, and I arrived at 6:30.
It was her interview in London, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, so I got hold of an old ABC railway directory, and it was a little bit later in the war, but I had a look. In the railway directory, there was a route of which I thought Betty came down, and she corrected me, and when I looked it up, the details were that, within a few minutes of the time she said of arriving at 6:30, and literally to 3 minutes, the time was exactly the same. So she remembered the exact stations and the...
Because you thought she'd arrived at another station and there was no way she could have done that, so she couldn't remember the time.
Yes.
But it turned out she'd come a different route and she was right.
And it was right almost to the minute, yes.
Yes, if that's what you want to know, it would have been, I think, a change in Shrewsbury probably, and then straight down to London.
And there was a lot of things that, new things are discovered about Betty as well, that we went through looking at your service record as well. There were some interesting things in your application form to come to Bletchley, and it said on there that you were interested in being a driver. You didn't have a driving license. So all kind of like interesting things like that. There was all stuff about being in the mansion as well and some of the detail. And the most amazing thing was Betty then whips out a telegram that she'd got that she'd sent to her father from Bletchley for his birthday, and it was like one of the celebration ones. So all these things in like over a decade I've known Betty, there was all these new things coming out, but it's always been a bit of a standing joke, and I go, well, that's not in the book.
But it's all in the book now, isn't it?
It is, yes. There's a great deal of detail.
And you also have an audio book of this book, and anyone who goes and buys the audiobook, obviously the whole book is narrated by someone else, but there's an introduction and an epilogue, isn't there?
There
narrated
is.
By what young lady?
Betty again, I'm afraid.
But I can tell listeners now, go out and buy a copy of the audiobook, because you get to hear Betty Webb's giggle in the introduction, don't we?
I understand so, yes.
Now, I asked Betty how today was for her. How was it for you as Betty's guest?
I thought it was really marvellous. I've come with Betty to reunions for well over a decade, and I have spoken to a lot of veterans. Today was a real opportunity to speak to the families, and it was really interesting to see that side of it and their experiences of their mothers primarily, and how they came to learn about their mother's time at Bletchley, what sort of happened sort of afterwards, how they then went to work after, like Betty found it difficult to get a job after the war. So there was somebody who was in the services, and it was much easier for her to say, I was a Wren, and didn't have to explain. Somebody else was in the Foreign Office, and it was quite tricky again for her to get work. So it was really interesting to get right in amongst the family and get the shared experience of the family and the friends' perspective. And I thought that was really, really good. Having it always been quite veteran focused, my speaking to people, it was really interesting and enlightening to see that, because it's so important to the families, you know, that.
Yeah, because I mean, that's the thing this year. We had the veterans sat together so they could all enjoy the day together. But I didn't think about the other side of that, is the families and friends were sat together. So I guess it was a completely different outlook for you, wouldn't it?
Yes, and Betty's made quite a lot of friends with veterans that she didn't know in the war, but has exchanged details with. And there was quite a bit of exchange of details kind of then, really, you know, that shared sort of experience of the other veterans. Obviously, I'm a friend of Betty, not a family member, but it was really good to be sort of part of that and to experience their collective experience of their parents sharing the news and their time at the war. And it is a massive and important part, and they're so proud of it. And it was a real pleasure to be sort of amongst that group and to listen to their stories.
If releasing a book wasn't enough to do this year, you've had a few other things this year, haven't you?
I have indeed, yes. I was privileged to be present at the coronation of our now king. That was absolute magic, because the command was completely unexpected. And I think it was through the fact that I'm a member of the British Legion, and no doubt they were allocated a number of seats, that I was one of the lucky ones to be given a seat in the nave, where I was able to see all the important people coming and going.
Well, all the important people got to see the important Betty Webb.
Oh, no. Only one of many, believe me. But it was a fantastic day, and the atmosphere in the Abbey is, it's just unique. And everything, as you can imagine, was running very, very smoothly indeed. The only thing that was a bit daunting was the fact that we had to be up at 5 o'clock in the morning to get there in time for the doors closing at 7:30. The other thing about the Abbey was the acoustics. I mean, the singing there is out of this world.
Was it?
I'm sure anyone who's been, you'll agree with me. It's unique.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been. And of course, you were a member of the Magical Society during the war here, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And we often used to go. We didn't have instruments. We sang without instruments, sometimes out in the field if it was a nice day. Or.
Now, that's not your only royal occasion this year, is it?
No, it isn't. I was privileged to attend the Chicksands, which is the Intelligence Corps headquarters near Bedford. Yes, that was something else at which...
Was that their passing out parade or something?
Yes, it was when the students are presented with their prizes.
Oh, right.
And Princess Royal officiated over all that, and she was marvellous, in my view, in that she spoke to every individual student who was receiving a prize of one sort or another, and she gave them all a lot of her time.
And she met you as well, again?
Indeed she did, yes. And we talked about the the fact that it was very difficult to be on a horse from Buckingham Palace down to the Abbey and quickly change and get into something more suitable for sitting in the Abbey. Yes, that was quite fun. She is full of fun, actually. Yes, I've just remembered that in connection with Chicksands, I remembered that I had a little book about 5 or 6 inches square, which was my membership of the Intelligence Corps up until 1947. Now, why I stopped contributing, I don't know, but the book was in good order, so I took it to Chicksands for interest, and they're over the moon and going to put it in their museum.
How come you were demobbed in 46, weren't you?
Yes.
So how come you were still paying subscriptions a year later?
Well, I'm not quite sure, but they ceased to take any money from me. But
you should ask for that year's worth of money back.
Don't know who to ask.
What about compound interest on that? That wouldn't be bad. And you've done all this in... Now, I know a gentleman shouldn't mention a lady's age, but in the year that you became 100, haven't you?
That's right, yes, surprisingly, I'm still here.
Still here and still giving talks, aren't you?
Oh, yes, definitely, yes.
How many have you given this year?
Oh, well, because of COVID, they're very much reduced, but only 3 or 4, which may well, if COVID goes away, we'll perhaps have some more, I don't know.
Betty's been very modest about her talks. I have had the pleasure of accompanying her to a number of them, one of which was to a history festival, the Chalk Valley History Festival.
That's massive, yeah.
In which Betty had a packed out tent, and there were over 300 people in this tent that she gave a talk to. And as always, it's always about promoting in Bletchley Park. And she always says, please go and visit. And she always asks people to put up their hand, yes, and say, how many people have been to Bletchley Park? And there were a good amount of people.
Yeah.
And then at the end, she reminds them, go back. It was a packed out talk. And the queue for her to sign her book was enormous. And she signed every single one. She didn't stop. And some of them had 3 or 4 copies of the book. And they were too deep. And it extended well out of the tent. The bookshop sold out of them. And she signed every one. You didn't stop until every customer had their book signed, or at the end when they told out book plates.
We haven't actually said what the name of the book is, have we?
No, my new book is called No More Secrets by Betty Webb. I'm really Charlotte, but I've used Betty because most people know me as Betty.
We all know you as Betty.
That's right. But what we haven't mentioned is that in the talk, Simon drew attention to my story about the khaki knickers, which we were issued with when we went into the ACS. They were so large, you either got the elastic up under your armpits, or if you had the elastic round your waist, the bottom part was somewhere near your ankles. But my mother thought they were wonderful because we had a small holding and she used to wear these knickers when she was out with the animals.
Yeah, No More Secrets by Betty Webb, published by Mardle Books, is available at all bookshops, including Bletchley Park, and in which you may find a signed copy.
I think even 3 or 4, at the age of 100, going out and giving long talks about what you and your colleagues did at Bletchley Park is amazing, Betty. It keeps you alive, doesn't it?
It does. It's been very interesting, because obviously one meets all sorts of interesting people with quite extraordinary questions sometimes.
I mean, we're friends. We've had conversations in private where you've said to me, this place has given you a new lease of life, hasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, I dread to think what I would do if I didn't have the Bletchley interest.
And you've kept serving us all these years. It's so wonderful.
I hope so.
So, as I always say to you, Betty, thank you for your service.
Well, I have to add and underline that I was privileged to be here at the time that I was, and therefore I'm able still to contribute to an extent.
And always modest. Thank you, Betty. You take care.
Thank you.
I see your face in every flower, your eyes in stars above. It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
It's the end of a very long day after a lot and lot of planning. Now, would you like to introduce yourself to our listeners? Because I don't believe we've ever interviewed you, have we?
No, I don't think you have. So I am Sue Litchfield. I am database and membership manager here at Bletchley Park. I have been here for 18 years now. And so I've done many of these reunion events. I think I've done every one actually since I've been here. And always it's the biggest pleasure and the biggest day of the year for me. And all I ever want is that all the veterans get to have a fabulous day, enjoy their time here, meeting each other and just being back and remembering.
Oh, I think we can guarantee that, Sue. And you're playing down your part and you organise just about everything for it, don't you? You make their day.
All my thought is when this event comes, the time to start planning is, this is for them. This is how I want to be able to be respectful for what they all did.
Yeah.
For so long, it was a secret. Nothing can be told. Nobody could do anything. And to me, this is us just saying thank you, because this is why we're here. This is why I'm still here 18 years later, because I can't walk away, because I need to be here for this. I said to someone today, because she was one of the younger ones at 97, bless
yes.
her. And I said to her, I said, if you are back next year, I'll be here to do it. It's the event of my year here at Bletchley Park. Obviously, I love all the other stuff I do and everything as well, but the reunion and the veterans, and as long as they go away with a smile on their face, feeling happy, feeling like they've had the chance to talk. And that was the difference this year, because if you've seen things before, this year was a change.
Yeah, we made because it more intimate.
We did. Obviously, sadly, we're getting fewer veterans coming through. So it was just a way of doing it so that, yes, we wanted to include all family. We want everyone to be involved, but we also wanted the veterans to be able to speak to each other, because a lot of the time, if you've got a big marquee and you've got a veteran over this way, a veteran, yeah. and they can't sort of get that together bit.
I mean, all the ones that I've spoken to today, they've all loved this change because it's been more intimate.
Mm.
They've been able to sit and just chat with yeah. each other. Yeah, some of them have met each other in previous
yeah.
events. But also, we had a couple of ladies who haven't been either ever before or for years.
Yeah,
haven't we?
No, exactly. And that's the thing. And so it was such a nice mixture today because we've got people that have been here every year for the last few ever, obviously not including the 2 years we couldn't do anything
yeah.
for everything that went on. But to actually have other ones today that haven't been before, and hopefully they've gone away, and again, they'll also feel like they've had a lovely day, just to remember, just to go back and just, you know. And I know a lot of them, obviously, we know they didn't know what each other did, but who they sat with, but they've all got the same link.
Yeah.
If they weren't here, they were an outstation, they did the same thing. And
yeah.
it's always the thing where too many times they all go, I wasn't important. They were all important. Whatever they were doing, they all did their part. They all played their part. And then they went away and they forgot about, well, not forgot yeah. about it, but they put it to the back of their mind. They couldn't say anything for so long.
Mm.
And then bless them, we now come along and go, well, can you tell us everything?
Yeah.
And they're going, they signed an Official Secrets Act and that's what they did. And that's what they always said. And for so many years, I'd have people ring up and they'd go, oh, someone's asking me about this. Can I tell? And to actually get them to say, it's okay. It's been released now. You can say it's fine. There's no problem. And that sort of thing.
Because you're the other part of your job is working with the Roll of Honour, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so I've done bits on that sort of thing as well. And before it's too late, we just need to get all this information. And that's what, again, this is to do with today. We've had Jonathan, who does the Roll of Honour. He's been anyone we haven't interviewed, that we can perhaps get their
yes,
story.
Yes, we're hoping there's
and
three
get them.
We've
yes,
done
that we haven't interviewed. And that's the amazing thing. So that's three more stories hopefully we're going to be able to expand upon within the Roll of Honour.
Well, I think I've seen 17 very happy veterans today.
I hope so.
So You and the rest of the team, Sue, have done an amazing job. You can go home, put your feet up, and I think have maybe a G&T.
That might be a nice idea.
Thank you, Sue.
No problem.
It's just the thought of you, the very thought of you, my love.
Thanks to the paid and volunteer staff, visitors and veterans who took part in this podcast. To find out more, go to bletchleypark.org.uk. You can follow Bletchley Park on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. This podcast is produced for the Bletchley Park Trust by MC Fontaine and supported by Audioboom. If you like this podcast, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening. And we'll have more decrypts from the home of the Codebreakers next month.